I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 510. The only review that will liken a Doctor Strange character to a Pokemon character.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming to gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
What's up?
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing real good. I got some drink in my cup.
That's always good.
It's always good when I got some drink in my cup. Because I got paid this week, so I re-upped on the boozatorium.
Just got paid. Friday night.
Well, it's not Friday night, but it's like Friday night. I had a good Friday night. I don't know about you, but this past week I saw Chris Hardwick because he was in town.
How the fuck was that?
It was dope. I love Chris Hardwick. He makes my heart go pitter-patter. You know me. I always love clever comedians, and if you're nerdy, well then, holy grail achieved. I've been a fan of Hardwick's for a long time. I don't watch Walking Dead, so I don't watch his Talking Dead stuff, but I'm addicted to At Midnight. And I've seen him do stand-up a couple of times, and he did not disappoint. I had a great time. He's doing his ID 10T, which is basically Idiot in Leap Speak, tour. And it was absolutely, absolutely a great set. So I had a blast here in Boston seeing him, and I look forward to seeing him again on the next time he comes through town, because he is absolutely hysterical. So if you haven't had a chance to check him out while he's on the road, if he's coming to your town, I highly recommend that you check him out. It's a good time. There's nerdy laughs to be had by all. It is just hysterical. So it was a good night. Had a blast. It was a great way to kind of start the weekend, and then I jumped into some games, and I jumped into some anime, so guess what I'm going to be talking about?
Anime and games?
Yeah, and saw Doctor Strange, and I know you saw Doctor Strange as well.
Yes, I did.
So I'm going to tell you guys right now, we are going to talk about Doctor Strange, and we are going to talk about the whole movie. So when we get to the point where we start talking about Doctor Strange, and you haven't seen it yet, and you kind of want to live a spoiler-free life, I suggest that you turn the podcast off at that point, because I will tell you, I am trying to live a spoiler-free life for, like, movies and TV shows that I really want to see. Sometimes things don't let me be like that. Like, I've been staying away from all the Rogue One stuff because I think that I'm going to end up seeing it in the theater, and I really want to go into it clean without anybody else's prejudices kind of sitting on my shoulders. And I was doing a really good job of it until Doctor Strange, because the rotating trailer that they have right now going around with the movie is either Rogue One or the Wonder Woman trailer, and I was really hopeful that they were going to show the Wonder Woman trailer, and they didn't. It was Rogue One. As soon as it started, I was like, thanks, Obama!
Yes, because Obama had something to do with that.
No, he didn't, but I mean, everybody blames him for everything, so I might as well
jump on that.
With my first world problems, I mean, I might as well be like, thanks, Obama. I figure I'll be like the cool kids, but really, Obama had nothing to do with it. So, and unfortunately, I was in a room full of nerds because we were seeing Strange, so everybody had opinions about it, and I was like, la, 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 trying not to listen to them. So I'm still on the fence about whether or not I'll see it in the theater. So we'll see about that. But we got stuff to talk about this week, so we might as well go ahead and jump right into it. I'm going to start with some game stuff because, hey, why not, right?
Why not?
Bunch of games coming out. You know, Dishonored 2 is getting ready to drop. I can't wait to get my hands on that. Watch Dogs 2, also getting ready to drop. Like, Broke Bitch November is upon us, people. So it's already started. And for a lot of people, that started with Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. There's a lot of opinions about Infinite Warfare. I noticed that a few people that I saw on my social feeds talking about it, not even trending when it came out, which typically games do trend on Twitter for a little bit on the day of their release. Primarily the people that were sharing this little nugget of information are not big fans of Call of Duty. I have said on the podcast before that I'm not a fan of Call of Duty multiplayer, and it's just because of my personal experience as a female playing multiplayer. I have had not great experiences with the Call of Duty community personally when I've played multiplayer online, so I don't. And I have not played multiplayer for the last probably 3 or 4 Call of Duty games that I've picked up. But I continue to pick up the Call of Duty games because, in all honesty, they're the first shooters that I've enjoyed in a long time as far as their main campaign. Just the mechanics, the look and feel, and the story. You know, I've enjoyed almost all of the Warfare games in the title, in the franchise, which Infinite Warfare is like the, I think it's the 12th or the 13th, I think it's the 13th game for the franchise. So, you know, COD's been around for a while. It's not going anywhere. It's one of the top games when it comes to competitive play, and for a reason. You know, the mechanics work. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And for a long time, you know, a lot of people, their criticism of the franchise has been that it's just the same game and like 4 different people. Well, when it comes to shooters, there's only so many stories that you can tell. As long as the mechanics are good, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And so that's right. never been a complaint of mine when it comes to COD. It's just really been my experience with multiplayer. Because you can't control people. And, you know, a lot of people that have a lot of time to play Call of Duty online are, I would say, more in the grouping that's less mature, let's say, than typically the type of people that I run around with in multiplayer. And so my experience, I've just experienced a lot of hostility aimed at me or specifically sent to me because I'm female. And that's just not a fun experience for me. This is the first Call of Duty game that I've picked up that I did not get the season pass. I don't have any intention of playing the multiplayer maps. I will probably play some zombies because I'm interested in seeing it being set in an 80s era, and there seems to be focus on it being in an arcade for a while. So I will be jumping into that, but I've just started my play with Infinite Warfare, and I got really excited about it, I think like a lot of people did, when its trailer was released at E3 and we were all looking at this trailer trying to figure out if it was another Dead Space game or like it was it a completely new IP. Because the battles that we were shown in the trailer were all happening in space. And it looked absolutely amazing. When it was revealed that it was Infinite Warfare, the arrow was like,
lost my shit.
There were some people who were like, back on the COD wagon. And then other people were like, I was really interested in this game until I found out it was Call of Duty. For most of those people, I didn't have a lot of respect, but I was very interested in the game once I saw the trailer because it looked really fantastic. It looked fast-paced, which I prefer in my shooters. You know, it was in space, so check that nerd boner right there.
Here's the thing about COD.
Right.
I mean, COD is a very linear type of experience. Like, yeah. Clearly we're, you know, and a lot of people...
It's not like Phantom Pain.
Right, exactly. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, the experience of COD is always relatively the same. So here is this element, here is this game that we're all like, oh my god, what is this? Like, I'm totally for it. And you'd think that everyone would be like, oh my god, look at COD stepping outside of themselves, going into a completely different frontier for them. Because, I mean, Dead Space has kind of done this with, you know, the space moves. But, like, this is the first time that we're seeing COD do this. And, I mean...
I don't know. It's either going to work or not work, right?
Right. Right. Like, but we should be applauding, you know, this team for taking the risk and trying to do something inventive with their cash cow. Because, I mean, they could have just done another Mega Ultimate Warfare with Kevin Spacey times 2.
Right.
And people still would have bought it.
Which I do think that Advanced Warfare was a great game. I enjoyed Advanced Warfare.
I'm just saying, like, they could have stayed comfy in their swim lane. And here they're like, you know what? Let's try to jump out of ourselves just a little bit and present something new and different.
Yeah.
And here it is.
And it is a little bit different. It's not a lot different. So,
well,
you know, veteran players, it's still, You know, same button mapping and ultimately same deal. Pick up weapons, put bullets in things, dodge some destructibles that are coming at you, rinse and repeat. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think
multiplayer for this, though, is going to be quite unique with these maps being in space where, you know, you're kind of floating around and stuff. Because before, like, you had more mobility with your feet, whereas now you have to really learn how to, like, sling yourself.
You need to think in through the 3D space because you do have the ability to do some very neat things. So at the core of the game, the story is that it is a somewhat peaceful time in the not so distant future. So it's, you know, takes place after advanced warfare. So you still have the advanced fighters. So you have the gear that allows you to do the amazing jumps and work up buildings and have controlled descent when you jump off of high things, which does make the play area much more interesting, especially when you are in first person, which the game is in. But what I like about the game is it starts off in a peacetime, and the intro that you have to the game is basically this small group that is running a dark op, and they're trying to recover this weapon from a place called Europa.
Europa, more like Yanopa.
And everything goes sideways, and we're introduced to our big baddie, who our big baddie is played by Kit Harrison in the game. And
ooh,
so much.
Jon Snow knows everything this
time.
Jon
Snow is aware of things. Instantly is a bad baddie, okay?
Did he kick a dog?
I'm not giving anything away here because, again, this is the start of the game. So when the mission finally goes tits up, you and two other soldiers who are expelled out of the base when an airlock blows are on the surface of Europa, which is an ice moon, I believe. And so it's all encased in ice, and your rig has been damaged, so you're losing oxygen, and you're trying to get to your other two guys so you guys can link up and hopefully get oxygen shared between you two. And Kit's men get to your men first and to you first. Kit has his men pick you up, and he's like, this man needs oxygen, let's get him a tank. And so you think, oh, maybe this guy's benevolent and, like, we can reason or at least be, like, decent prisoners of war. And he starts to interrogate you just very calmly, having a conversation with you. And is about, you know, well, who came with you? Who was on the ship? How many of you were here? Like, all this stuff. The officer that you're playing is not giving much up. He's like, look, my men need medical. Maybe I'll talk to you, but, like, let's take care of the men first. Kit's character looks him dead
sure
in the
like,
face.
Oh, okay. Cap. Yeah.
And is like, oh, your men are important to you. And so he puts you down and walks over to your men with his gun and points his gun first at your men. And you're like, oh, shit, I'm going to have to choose probably whether or not I tell him stuff or, like, let him beat my men up, kind of like the early missions in Wolfenstein where you have to pick, like, who lives or who dies with the doctor. So I'm getting ready for this choice. And then all of a sudden, Kit turns his gun to one of his own men and shoots and kills one of his own men. You're like, what the
oh, man,
hell?
He showed you that he doesn't give a fuck about his men.
Correct. And so he comes over to you and he's like, caring about your men, that's why your people will never win this war. And you're like, but we're not at war, I don't think, right?
You are now. Maybe. Credit.
And so he asks you again and you're like, it's just us. And he's like, I don't believe you. And so he takes the oxygen tank off you. So you start to struggle and you see in the heads-up display that your oxygen level starts dropping really quickly. He turns to a man and he's like, kill them all. Let's go. And so the robot android guys get into position as well as the regular men. And he goes, and don't waste any bullets. And you're like, no, 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 no. And you just see, like, these robots start curb stomping your men in the head. And then a guy comes over to you and starts punching you in the face and the display starts going all wonky. And then just when the coup de grace hit is going to happen, the screen stops and you realize that this is a debriefing that the main character that you are going to play is participating in underneath an admiral. And so the motion capture for the game is fantastic. You know, they've definitely got some good talent on the voice acting side to propel it forward. And so this is how you start the game. And so you play as a guy named Nick Reyes. And he immediately wants to go in and go after Kit Harrison and all of his baddies to stop things before they go crazy. And the admiral of your fleet is like, no, we can't do that. You know, the politicians are in charge. And if we were to do anything in any way, shape, or form, it would be seen as an act of war. So we can't do that. So for some of the people that have talked about it not having a story, I have to disagree. Like, you are fed the plot for why you are doing what it is that you're doing. And it's a setup that is a somewhat emotional setup, if you allow it to be an emotional setup. You just watch some fellow soldiers who are doing their job and trying to protect people basically get curb stomped by this bad guy who's just kind of out in space acting like a rogue pirate almost, and you don't exactly know what his plan is. But your admiral's like, we can't really do anything, so for now, at least, just enjoy Fleet Week, because it turns out the planet that you're on, it's Fleet Week, so the entire armada for the Earth Nation is on this planet to celebrate every ship and every fighter plane and all that kind of stuff. So he's like, go up to the roof and get on a Huey and just, you know, take in the sights and whatever, and we'll see what the politicians want to do. But things could be bad. So you end up walking out of the mission and passing all these people who are from different nations or different flags, and they're all celebrating because, like, woo, Fleet Week. You have a sidekick named Salter at that moment, who's a team member, who's a chick, and she's badass, at least as far as I've played so far. I like her a lot. She's got an attitude, but she's a decent AI with a shot. I found that in the missions that I was running, I didn't always have to get the killing shot to get to the next level, which I like. I like when AI actually is effectual and not just a bullet absorber while you're in cover trying to recover health.
Okay, nice.
So there were times where, like, there were three or four guys that were left on the map to shoot us, and I was in cover, and Salter just popped up and took them all out. So I'm like, all right, useful AI. This is good. This is good. Because there's nothing more frustrating when AI is like, put 60 bullets in somebody and they still haven't died because the system is geared for you having to get the kill shot.
This is your story. You have to progress.
Yeah. And so they're really good about the AI leading you to where you need to go, because while the story is very linear, in many of the areas that I've played in the maps, you can still explore around the maps. So it's not like you're guided only down the one path. You can backtrack and things like that. So they would always stay in place of where I needed to go, which made it easier to figure out, okay, this is the door that I have to open to actually progress to the next area, as opposed to this is just a door that I can open to maybe find more ammo or new guns or things like that, which is useful. But basically, we are going after what's called the SDF. They are trying to basically take over everything.
When is it someone trying to take over everything?
And they're headed up by Kit Harrison's character. It's very interesting, you know, for me at least, to have a Call of Duty that has a story that I would say is, at least in my initial playthrough, just as deep as the story that was in Advanced Warfare. And I thought that Advanced Warfare really did a great job in drawing me in. And part of that was Kevin Spacey and his performance. And so I think that this game is following in those footsteps of getting, you know, a traditionally trained actor to play the baddie and bring the baddie to life, because you need your bad guy to be brought to life. Like, you need your bad guy in a game to be someone that you as the player really identify with as somebody that needs to be stopped. At least that's what I want in a game to help spur me to finish the game. You know, if I don't really care about the characters that have been affected, or I don't really care about the bad guy being so bad that, like, I need to save, like, this fictional universe from them, I don't finish a game. And I will be finishing Infinite Warfare. So, you know, the gameplay, like I said, is really fast. The game looks beautiful. I haven't experienced any lag whatsoever in running through the game. Like I said, it is very fast-paced, so when you are in an area and things are live fire, you feel the pressure of it. Enemies don't wait or attack you one at a time. They will flank you. One mission I was in, we cleared a road, a street leading up to a densely populated with citizens that were trying to flee the area with like four or five bad guys, and all of them were attacking us at all times, not just waiting one at a time, and they were using cover effectively. So it really was, you know, trying to eyeball who was making themselves available to basically be shot in order to time correctly my cover versus fire, while my compatriots, which I had the Admiral and Salter and my bot fighter soldier, EVN, which everybody refers to as Ethan, who has kind of a personality of a person.
Oh.
I would definitely give his personality as something of, like, in between, I gotta do my duty, and I wasn't even scheduled to work today, which is kind of interesting coming from a android, basically. But that was really interesting. And as I was doing this fight, I was taking shots, and I couldn't figure out where those shots were coming from, even with the HUD pointing out the direction. And it wasn't until I turned around I realized that one of the enemies had flanked and come through the building and was behind us and was now taking cover behind.
That is definitely elevated if
I've
ever heard it.
Yeah, so you do have to be aware of all of your surroundings. The thing that you have to get rid of is not dead set in front of you, which a lot of FPSs rely on. You know, you enter the room, the bad guys are across the room, you take out the bad guys across the room, you cross the room, into the next room, rinse, repeat. That's not the case in this game. If you don't take people out in a fast enough order, the enemies will try to find another way to get around to you to get shots on you. And I appreciate that because that adds to the difficulty and really, for me, realism of the game. Like I said, I've just started, so I'm barely into the beginning of the game. It's captured me enough that I will complete it. Like, I'm looking forward to diving back into the campaign to complete the game. The weapons arrangement is varied, just like every other Call of Duty game in the FPS series. So there's all different types of weapons that have different reload speeds. I do wish that I had active reload like I have in Gears of War, just because I've been playing that so much recently that I'm used to that. So like when I see the reload prompt, I'm like, oh, hit it now and I'll have bullets like right now. And I was like, nope. It actually takes you for this weapon to pull out the clip and put in the new clip. It takes you like a second and a half, 2 seconds, so you better be in cover, motherfucker, or you's taking bullets, which is interesting. But like I said, so far, I've really enjoyed the game. If you like first-person shooters that are fast-paced, you will like the campaign in Infinite Warfare. I don't know what the total time is as far as running through the campaign will be for me. I'm going to guess for the way that I play and typically how Activision and Infinity Ward tend to focus on the campaign, I'm going to guess that's going to take somewhere between 8 and 10 hours to complete, which as far as I'm concerned is plenty enough to do. I would recommend it if you like FPSs, you know, and if you don't, then the game's not for you, you know. Like, I get so upset when people try to convince people to play a game if it's outside of a genre that you enjoy. You're probably not going to enjoy the game then. Just because your friend likes it doesn't mean you will. Like, I've had a lot of people try to, still to this day, convince me to play Doom. And I'm like, dude, I get it. Like, you like Doom. But you like rail shooters. I don't. Every time I've watched somebody play Doom, I'm like, yeah, looks like you're having a good time. And I enjoy watching you play the game. But I'm not going to enjoy playing the game.
How do you feel about Prey, though, then? Because I think a lot of people have the strong assumption that Prey is going to be very Doom-esque.
And this is my thing. Like, from what I've seen so far that Bethesda shared with us, Prey seems to look more like Deus Ex, which is not a rail shooter, than a rail shooter. But we've only seen that trailer and some of the tidbits on the character design stuff. Or at least that's all I've seen so far of the game. So I haven't seen anything yet that tells me that is going to be a rail shooter. Where it may be Doom-esque is in how fast it moves. You know, because Doom ran at 60 frames a second. Where it may be Doom-esque is how fast it moves. And how polished the models look. Because that's one thing I give Doom, like, mad props for is, it is an unbelievably beautiful looking game. Every kill looks brutal. Every model for baddie that you fight is very articulated. The bosses look fantastic. It's a great looking game. It's just the mechanic itself. I just don't enjoy rail shooters as a genre. Me personally. And that's why I'm not going to spend the money to pick up Doom for me to play. Because I know I won't finish it. And I try really hard to not buy games that I'm not going to finish. And there are just some games that I know I'm not going to finish. So I'm still on the fence about purchasing Prey myself until I learn more about it. if it ends up playing more like a Dishonored 2 or a Deus Ex, I will more than likely pick up Prey if that's the type of gameplay that it has, because I enjoy action shooters and I enjoy action puzzle games and I enjoy first person shooters. I'm just not into rail shooting. That's just me.
Not you.
But I appreciate the genre for what it is and how it really revitalized gaming, because games like the original Doom and Wolfenstein on the PC, I really do think reinvigorated the gaming industry when they came out. So I give all props and honor and praise where it's due. It's just not for me. And I think that that's one thing that the gaming community needs to do a better job of, is recognizing games for what they are and what they do for the industry as a whole. And that, yeah, they may not be your cup of tea. Like, turn-based games, I don't enjoy them. I will not pick up a turn-based fantasy, Final Fantasy game. But I don't shit on them, because they're amazing games. They tell great stories. They have great gameplay for people who do like turn-based games. I'm of the mind of, if I'm playing a turn-based game, I better be playing a tabletop game. If I'm playing a digital video game, I don't want to wait a turn.
I get you.
So that's just me. So, like I said, I've been enjoying Infinite Warfare. When I complete it, you will definitely hear about it on the podcast, and you'll also get a write-up on our website about it. But I'll tell you right now, I definitely feel like I'm going to get my $60 worth on the campaign and on zombies. So that's that.
All right.
On that.
All right.
Can I just, like, real quick pop in, like, a little bit on Yuri on Ice? And then we can talk about Strange.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm just going to pop in a little bit on Yuri on Ice, and then you can start off the Strange stuff.
Okay.
Because I'm interested in your take on it. So Yuri on Ice is an anime that is for the winter season that started. It's on Crunchyroll. I don't think it's on anything else streaming right now, but I could be wrong. As far as major streaming services like Funimation and those guys, I believe that it's just Crunchyroll. I don't even think Hulu has it. But I only started watching it because my feed was blowing up on Facebook with some of my friends who really like anime, with memes and GIFs about it. Yuri on Ice is about this kid named Yuri, who is a male figure skater, singles, and is competing on a national level. It's getting close to being like the end of his career. Like, everyone's speculating whether or not, if he places high enough in this particular competition, whether he'll compete for another year or not. And he's definitely behind the leader in the category, who himself is also having the same rumors banded about him, because he's like 26 or 28. He pretty much has been winning. He's pretty much...
His wife is over.
But as far
30.
As like, as far as figure skating goes,
that is true.
That is really on the edge of you about to retire and either become a commentator and do the exhibition shows everywhere, or a coach.
You're right.
Right?
You're right.
And he's an absolutely gorgeous pretty boy. And so after seeing the memes, I'm like, okay, this is obviously a pretty boy show. And I'm just, I don't know if I need one of those right now or not. And I'm like, eh.
It's a Bishonen anime with all the cute boys.
And I'm just like, okay, all right. Well, you know, the environment right now is kind of toxic, so I could probably use a little saccharin in my life. So, shit, why not? I'll watch it.
The man saccharin.
Oh, it's beyond saccharin. So it's, as far as I can tell right now, it's yaoi without the sex, just as of yet. And I didn't realize that, and I should have. Like, in one of the last memes that I saw, I should have realized this, but I didn't. So, if you take Free, which was the swimming anime.
Oh, yeah, you did not. Yep.
Okay. Well, change everybody from being a swimmer to being a male figure skater.
Okay.
And that's Yuri on Ice. So, Yuri competes, and he has a bad show, a bad program, and he falls. And so he placed dead last, is really beating himself up about it. And his coach is like, don't worry about it. You'll get him, you know, in the next competition and stuff like that. And
you can do it, kid.
And he's just like, yeah, sure. Of course I will. And then he goes into the bathroom and he calls his parents, who have been supportive of him ice skating, but don't really get like why it's important to him or whatever. And apologizes to his mom and starts like bawling in this bathroom stall. And this other skater, I want to say from, like, Ukraine or something like that, who's also named Yuri and is very much, like, in hip boy clothing, you know, like, almost K-pop boy band so cool.
Like, he's like the it guy. He's so stylish,
like, it hurts. Basically, like, kicks in the stall, calls him a pussy, and tells him, like, either get your shit together and skate well, or just get the fuck out of skating. And so
So it's like Kaleida Star with Layla and Sora.
Yeah, basically. So Yuri goes back home, the sweet Yuri, because he's, like, a brunette, and he's, you know, as far as skaters go, he's a little chunky. So, like, his coach is like, you need to lose weight, and, you know, that'll help you, like, get some more speed up and things like that in your program or whatever. So he ends up going home, and there's an ice rink in his hometown, and he goes there to skate to, like, get his thoughts and aggression out, and he's, like, questioning whether or not he should do stuff. And one of the things that he does, Victor is the pretty boy who's been basically winning back-to-back these national championships for, like, 5 or 6 years. And has these notable programs that, like, bring people emotionally to, like, ruin or whatever. And so one of these programs that he has, Yuri likes to skate, and it's his escape. And he does a really good job. Victor does, like, 4 or 5 quad moves in his program, which is unheard of, and lands them all with, like, ease and no problem. And Yuri is able to land them all as well. So he's just skating this program in his off day in his rink in his hometown, and one of his friends is there who's been, like, supporting him and almost acts like a coach when he's there with her two.
Does this person happen to have a video recorder with them?
She doesn't, but her two little sisters, who are twins, do. So they record it on their phone, and then the next day they put it out on YouTube. And Victor's fans are like, oh my God, who does Yuri think he is trying to skate this program? He's not really good, and I don't even understand why he's doing it, because he failed at the Worlds, and blah, 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 blah. And so he's like, oh my God, like, getting all this press, and he's like, I can never be in skating again. That's the end of my life. And so he just starts eating pork cutlets, because that's his, like, happy go-to food, comfort food. Uh-huh. So he's just, like, eating them, and he's like, I can't even anymore. And Victor actually sees him skate the program while he's laying on his couch surrounded by, like, all these flowers and things.
Flowers and cards.
Yeah. And so the next section, Victor has traveled to Yuri's hometown, to the inn that his family runs, and has set up shop and has decided that he is going to take a year off from skating, and he's going to coach Yuri. And Yuri's like, fuck. Yeah. So he moves all of his stuff in, and Victor has, like, no shame. So Yuri's, like, trying to comprehend that Victor's living in the inn, because he's a massive Victor fan. He has, like, posted them or whatever in his room and things like that. So he's taking a bath in the hot spring that's in the inn, and Victor just walks in, like, butt naked with all of his stuff hanging out. And you don't see his stuff, but you know his stuff is hanging out. And you're just like, oh, dude, what are you doing? He's, like, trying not to look at his stuff or whatever. And Victor's like, the bath looks amazing. Let's come in. And he's, like, super, super affectionate, to the point where, like, he's constantly coddling Yuri and, like, trying to hug him and hold him, and he calls him his sweet little piggy, and, like, they'll have conversations, and he'll, like, grab his chin and use his thumb to grab his lower lip and get, like, all up in his face like he's about to kiss him. And then Yuri's just like,
What's up, dude? You're a dude,
so, like, why am I getting nervous? And you shouldn't be touching my face, and also your drunk is very close to me. Bye! Victor then just like, we've got a little ways to go. And you start going, oh, is this gonna turn?
Like, I think, predatory.
this might turn on me. Like, what was that anime that I watched with the guy that was, you recommended it to me, with the guy that was all aloof, but moved the kid into his apartment. He was a writer, but he moved the kid into his apartment that really loved him. And then he eventually became an item and started doing it. And the tall writer who was older was blonde, and, like, the kid had, like, red hair.
Oh, yes.
I can't remember it, but you were like, you need to watch this. And I was like, I don't know. And then
His name's Aaron Yuki.
Yeah.
And, like, he has this big soliloquy about it. And I don't remember the name of the show, but I remember the scene.
Yeah, I remember the scene, too.
I remember the scene. And they're all in bands. They're like, he's a starlet, and he's, like, in a boy band, but, like, they haven't figured out what their sound is yet.
Right.
And they're all having their problems, but they're all, like, most of them are gay, except for one guy who you think's gay, and he's straight.
Yeah.
But people think he's gay, and he has a motorcycle.
Yeah. So that, I feel like Yuri on Ice is that.
Oh, my God. Oh, I know.
But with figure skaters. But the skating sequences are great because they're rotoscoped.
Okay.
So they're actual skaters performing these routines, and you get to watch them. And so, like, the other Yuri finds out, the Russian Yuri finds out that Victor's gone to train this other Yuri, and he's like, no, you promised to make me a program if I won that competition, and I came in second, so you should make it so that I can have my debut and take over for you. And so, like, we're going to have a battle. You can't train this guy. He has, like, no talent or whatever. And so Victor's like, okay, well, here's the deal. I have these two programs, and one's all about lusty love and the other one's all about emotional love, so you guys are going to skate these two programs, and whoever skates them the best, like, that's the person that I'll be the coach of. Yuri, Russian Yuri, is like, awesome, give me the sexy skating one. And he's like, no, you actually have to do, like, the passionate, sincere love one. The other Yuri, Pork Cutlet, has to do the sexy one. And he's like, I don't even know how to do that. And Victor's like, oh, wait.
Sex? What is this sex
right.
you're talking
about? And so Victor's
about?
Like, wait, have you never been with, like, anybody? And he doesn't say a woman. He's like, have you ever been with anybody? Like, anybody at all? We could fix that if you want to do that to, like, make yourself better prepared for the program.
Oh, yeah, because you know what? You know what these creative types need? Sex.
And so Yuri's like, nope, and, like, runs away. And it becomes this big deal because, again, the twins, who are basically, like, a mini PR firm, they're very, very advanced for...
They're shipping them so hard,
basically being, like, five in the series. And they're just like, oh, we have to get this on the internet, and we're going to make this whole thing. Like, we're going to get everybody here in the city to watch this thing because it's a big deal. So we're going to let people know that Victor's, like, laid down this challenge and this is where Victor is. So the press and, like, the whole city comes out. Pork Cutlet Yuri is, like, flipping out. Victor gives them both, like, some of his old costumes so they can really channel him. And he ends up going to a ballerina and being like, I need you to help me be sexy, but not in the way you think. And she's like, come on in. And so Yuri realizes, I can't be sexy like a man because I've never been, like, a man in charge of a relationship and sexy. He's like, but what I can do is I could be effeminate. So I need you to teach me how to be attractive, alluring, feminine, sexy. And he pulls it off. And so these are, like, the first two episodes, and I'm addicted. It's, like, my guilty pleasure anime right now, because I can't not look away whenever it's on, because it's
So it's Gravitation on Ice.
Yes, that's what it is. It's Gravitation on Ice. That's what it is. It's Gravitation on Ice, and I'm addicted. Oh. Just like I got addicted to Gravitation, and ended up buying it on DVD because I couldn't get, like, the episodes that have the scene didn't stream in the U.S., so I had to buy that DVD disc so I could see the episode.
Right, exactly. I know.
And so I did.
I remember.
You remember Gravitation when I remember. So that's what it is. It's Gravitation on Ice. So if you need some pretty boy possible sex in your life, in your anime, you should definitely check out Yuri on Ice because it scratches that itch so well.
Let me start our talk about
Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange. I thought it was really funny that we both were seeing it on the same day, even though I saw it later in the day than you did.
Yeah, you saw it almost exactly an hour and 10 minutes after me.
But I got to see it in the IMAX. I got the full 4K real D experience.
Did you do 3D or was it just like butt shaker IMAX?
No, they've enhanced the area that we go to. So now it's like 4K digital sound with the butt kickers and the
right. But was it 3D or a regular D?
Yeah, it was 3D.
Okay. All right. So it was all the dimensions.
Which everyone was like, be careful about that because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in it. You might get motion sickness.
Yeah.
And I have the capacity.
You do.
The capacity to get motion sickness.
Yeah. I do want to see it in 3D. So if you're interested in seeing it again, let me know.
It was gorgeous. Take all the flippy scenes from Inception and put that in the background of Doctor Strange.
Yep.
And that's how I felt, like, the whole time.
Yep.
I felt like I was inside of, like, a kaleidoscope that someone is just constantly turning.
Legit.
All the time.
Legit.
But the 3D actually did enrich the experience, I think, for me.
Yeah, if you have vertigo, do not see this movie in the theater.
Yeah, do not.
Don't.
In terms of the movie, because, I mean, like, when I first saw the trailer come out for it, one, it has Benedict Cumberbatch in it, so I was like, you know what? All about that.
Yeah,
all
because about you are a Cumberbitch.
I am a Cumberbitch.
Are you excited about the new Sherlock?
Believe it or not, I did not jump into the third season, so I'm now two seasons behind on Sherlock. Believe it or not, I really thought that they could have solidly ended it with the Moriarty arc that they did, because I thought it was very well done.
You know Moriarty's all up in the third season, right?
I know. Okay. He comes back. I know.
Okay.
It was due, but I liked the way that they ended.
Yeah, second season run was ended really well.
It was so strong. I'm like, you know what? I could walk away right now and be okay. And I think that's what kind of happened. And then I didn't fall back into the third
Or
the newer one. Though I heard that the fourth season is going to be the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Cumberbatch has always been a very strong actor to me. Like, he was great as Khan in the new adaptation. I liked it. I believed it for the world that Abrams
created. Agreed. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I was like, all right, I can suspend my belief for this. I can buy into this.
Yeah, it was beyond that Pegg took over the writing on.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a fan of Simon Pegg. Like,
he did a really good job with Beyond. I'm just going to say that right now. He did a really good job with Beyond.
And he was great in Spaced. Like, the Cornetto trilogy. Like, this man is a genius in his own right. So, I mean, I haven't seen Beyond yet. So, I cannot compare Khan to Beyond because I have not seen it. Eerily enough, I have not had a strong desire to see it, but I know I will because my fiance keeps throwing it in my face like we should see it. Anyway, going back to Doctor Strange. So Marvel, who's been kicking butt, not only in movies, but obviously also in series that we've seen, like in Netflix, like with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and stuff like that. When I saw the trailers for Doctor Strange, Cumberbatch sold me on it. And then I was like, I did not know much about Doctor Strange. I did not read the comic books. As we've talked about on the show a million times, you'll throw comic books at me and I will think about reading them and then I don't. But then I see a movie and then I'm all about researching to understand what I'm going to watch, which is exactly what happened. So I did some research on Doctor Strange, and what my takeaway was that we were going to get a man who, you know, has worked extremely hard for his success and is completely always driven by the next big thing. The thing that makes him even more famous than the last time, like, it's an obsession. It's an addiction. He is addicted to that level of fame and notoriety and will not take any chances. Will take risks, but only risks that he knows that he can be successful at. Like, he's not going to go to those deep, deep reaches where there's a bigger chance that he will fail. And I'm like, so this guy's going to be super cocky. He has to kind of be like borderline sociopath, and I hate to kind of say this, but like, there's a social disconnect that he has to have as well that puts him in this frame that makes him think that he is so, I don't want to say above, but just so further down the path than anyone else. Like, you know those people in your life where you go to approach them for a conversation and they, in their mind, have already had this conversation with you, so you're already behind to them. So they kind of come off like they're being assholes, but they're not intentionally being assholes, but they're being assholes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are spending the majority of the conversation that you've started catching up because you haven't realized that you are behind. And that's what I feel like his portrayal of this character was. He puts himself in this place where he thinks he's ahead of everything or he's further on this track. So then when all of a sudden fate and chance, the one thing that you cannot predict or control, decides to go, oh no, fucker. Fuck you. We're gonna fuck all your shit. And sure enough, like life, that in fact happens to him. So let's talk about the story a little bit. You have this I think he's like a neurosurgeon.
Yep, he's a neurosurgeon.
And he is like the best of the best, and he will let you know he's the best of the best, and he is not afraid to rub it in your face. In fact, he wants to rub it all in your face and in your nose. And he just wants you to, the stink of his success, he just wants it permeating on everything. He's like a dog in heat, just rubbing his success in everything he can in order to, like, hey, did you not realize
have some of my success? Have some more of my success. Try the success in your face.
That's what he is. And you see him, like, kicking ass, you know, saving lives, doing these crazy procedures that, you know, I think normal surgeons would be terrified to even think about. And he's at a hospital where, conveniently, he's also at the hospital with his lady interest, but not lady interest, Rachel McAdams, who I think suffers from giant white wet eye in a way that, you know, like, she always looks like she's about to cry. They're just so big. Her and Amy Adams, like, they both have chronic big wet eye. I want to just hand them tissues all the time.
He's like, do you need some Visine?
You know, like the whole, like, Ryan, you know, like, Ryan Gosling just won't eat his cereal.
Right.
I just want to find clips of Rachel McAdams
just won't let that tear drop.
Right. And like, you just go to reach, like, you go to like hand her a tissue and like, she like bats it away because she has to sit in that. And her name is Christine and she is an ER doctor. She is like that. I want to say she's kind of like that friend next door who knows you're an asshole, but still sticks by you because deep down she knows that there's like a sliver of good in you. But then, you know, like a helpful Labrador puppy, like one day you nudge it a little too hard. And then like all of a sudden, like it's not your favorite toy in the world. Their relationship, like the weird condescending bitchiness that Strange has towards her, it made me feel like that's how I'd imagine the Joker and Harley Quinn to kind of be. There's this dissonance between levels and how much better he thinks he is than her. And how he's willing to chop her down at a moment's notice the minute he feels even a shred or a shadow of threat. You know, if anyone's getting too close to the touchy-feelies, I am going to make you regret even thinking you can. And he does this in this movie. You get exposed to Strange. You get exposed to Christine, who's played by Rachel McAdams. And you kind of get this weird, will they, won't they, have they already, are they going to do it again scenario, which I don't know if they had to shoot in so quickly into the movie. He's kind of half addressing, you know, like, maybe I could, like, you know, like, if we hyphenated so I could still be first, like, maybe I could entertain the idea of, like, us as a thing. And he's on his way to talk at this gala event in his honor for neuroscience, and he's all dressed up looking fine as fuck in this fine-as-ass-fuck car. And of course he's speeding because, you know, nothing can harm him. He's completely invincible, you know, because his whole life he's built himself up to feel this way. And sure enough, fate intervenes and he's on his phone texting. Sure enough, at the end of the movie, there's a big thing that says, don't text and drive, kids, because you'll die.
You will die.
You will die. He's looking for his next big, you know, success story. And while looking down at his phone on a wet, windy road. Whoa.
A wet, windy road?
Wet, windy road. He plummets to what most normal people would have died on that first hit. But of course, you know, this is Marvel and they have to slow-mo the injury so you realize.
Look,
that,
anybody in a Lambo going that speed, going off a cliff like that is dead. They're dead.
Like, he should just be like, dead, and like, that be it.
And that was the end of the movie.
But the car hits like four or five times, and in the very last bit of it, like he's holding the steering wheel, and you know they're going to show you how fucked up of an injury this is. So like, I actually closed my eyes at that part.
It wasn't as bad as you thought it was going to be.
I heard all the crunching of the bones, like nacho chips, and I'm like, oh God, there goes his head.
Nachos.
There they go. He's like passing out, blood, half like in the water, like you think he's going to die, and then they do the whole flashing as he's being wheeled in. And there's Rachel McAdams with her giant wet eyes, like terrified, but still having to do her job. And, you know, he sees the lights above you because that is the last thing you see when you go for surgeries, guys, if you've never had one. Like, literally, as you are doped up, the last thing you will probably remember seeing are those five white lights before you go under. So when he comes to, his arms are propped up and there are all these fucking pins in his hands.
Yep.
And like, and Rachel McAdams, there she is with her fucking wet eyes, is just looking at him. And he's all like, what happened? What did they do to me? And she's like, look, no one could have done better. And he's like, what did they do to me?
And she's like, you know, there's a lot of damage and all this stuff. And they did the best that they could. And you were in for 11 hours. And he's like, what did they do? And she's like, the best that they could. No one could have done better. And then he's like,
I could have done better.
I know, but he was all pouty about it. He was like, I could have done better.
And of course, then at this point, because, you know, when you're at such a big pinnacle in your life, like, clearly you want to get back there as fast as you can. Because, you know, you're the best of the best. Like, you don't want someone to surpass you. And clearly with this hurdle now in front of you, that is now easily done. You know, and he throws all of his money, what he doesn't have and what he thinks he's going to have, and he liquidates all this stuff to do all these treatments. You know, and some of them, he even went to, like, a board of doctors. He's like, guys, if we do this, I have a stronger chance of, like, retaining some nerve damage. And they're like, you know, that could be done. And he's like, yeah, so let's fucking do it. Like he is not holding any bones about it. And he goes through all these procedures. He goes through, like, seven. And still at this point, like, he still has to do physical therapy, and his hands are still shaking. He is so disillusioned. Like, he believes that there's no hope. Like, he is at rock bottom, and he's doing his physical therapy with this guy, and he's just like, come here to a guy who has gone to the point of no return and has come back. And the guy's like, one dude. And he like tells him a story and he's all like bullshit. And he's like, no, for real. Like, let me go get this fucking file so I can prove your selfish ass that I'm right.
You
and sure enough,
he's self fucking gratification like, ass bitch.
Oh, man.
Like, literally, his face is like, bitch, I'm gonna find this file. It's a manual file, but I'm gonna find this file to shut your pompous ass up.
Oh, man. And he does. And that man schools him. And he gives him this file, which it's a really bad, like, paralyzed from pretty much the chest down thing that no one should.
And then when he finds the guy, it's Benjamin Bratt, and he's playing basketball.
Do you know what I feel bad for Benjamin Bratt? Because it seems like in most movies lately, something often very horrible happens to that man. Like, whatever horrible state he is in at the start of the movie.
Like, Benjamin Bratt needs to get a role where he's a good guy. He's kind of a good guy in this movie, but then after credits.
Exactly, which we'll get to, because we're going to spoil the fuck out of this.
Oh, whole thing.
So he goes to Benjamin Bratt, and he's just like, how are you able to be walking?
Benjamin Bratt. Chris Pratt, Benjamin Bratt.
Is it Bratt?
It's Bratt.
No,
Chris Pratt, Guardians of the Galaxy. Benjamin Bratt.
Miss Congeniality.
Miss Congeniality.
Yeah! Watching women movies.
Also, Catwoman.
Oh, boo!
Look, they can't always be Miss Congeniality.
So he's playing basketball. He's all like, how are you doing that? And he's all like, look, I couldn't move my body. I was giving up on my body. And I talked to some mystics, yo. Like, go to this place, talk to some mystics, and find the path. You can choose whatever, maybe get your miracle.
Just
and walk
go to Kamatage, dude. That's where you want to go. You want to go to Kamatage.
He's like, gotta go to Kamatage. And then it's like, quick shot to Kathmandu.
Because, you know, we just get to Nepal like that.
And here he is walking with his backpack and his scruffy looking hot ass and his shaky hands. I'll take care of you. You can bring all you want, Cumberbatch. Right ahead. Yell at me.
Panda's all like, I can hear you. Your hands won't be shaking unless you're happy. What? Hashtag.
Trust me. Cumberbatch. You won't find happiness with me, but I'll stay here anyway, and I'll wag my tail, and I'll have big wet eyes like Rachel McAdams, and you'll love me, damn it. Anyway.
I got use for your shaky hands. Come here.
Anyway.
And like, I'm inappropriate.
So here's the thing about his whole search for Kamatage while he's in Kathmandu. So, like, here's this tall white man walking around in Nepal, and he's just walking up to people like, hey, do you know where Kamatage is? And everyone's
Kamatage,
like,
Kamatage, anybody Kamatage?
And it's like, you know, this place is probably kind of secret, so you probably shouldn't be opening your mouth, drawing attention. Like, I would not walk through Harlem and be like, mafia? Mafia? Mafia?
Well, like, it's like walking down the street and be like,
ISIS?
Dimebag?
ISIS?
Dimebag?
Illuminati?
Can I get
Illuminati?
A dimebag? Anybody got it? See,
but anyway,
just don't do that.
And he's walking around, and then finally we see somebody in the background who's kind of following him, but is keeping a distance, like keeping a little trail, and he's got a hood on, so you know he's got to be involved somehow. And of course,
Edgy O4! It's Jimmy Dale!
You always have to take that wrong turn down a wrong alleyway so that someone wants to try to steal your shit. Because
your fucking protagonist always does. Regular people look down skanky ass alleyway and be like, nope.
It's pretty funny that, you know, he walks down this one walkway and there's like no one on it. And it's like, yep, this seems perfectly safe. Let me just walk down this abandoned.
No one does that. Like, I have been in Boston sometimes at night and be like, ooh, my phone says that I turn left here. And I look at the left and be like, nope, going another block.
So he gets approached by three gentlemen who are all like, give me your watch. And like, he's got a watch on. And it's all busted because he wore it the night that he had the accident. But he's like, this is my most prized possession. It's the only thing I really have left. Don't. And then, you know, because he's a hothead, he thinks, you know what? Okay. I kind of take these guys. So he goes to punch him with his fucked up hand.
With his
dumb
fucked
move.
Up hand. Dumb.
And then he gets all kicked and punched, kicks some more. And then hood guy shows up and does his cool, like, tai chi feng shui, you know, kung
he
fu.
He whoops the ass. You can go ahead. He just opens a can of whoop ass.
And he whoops the asses. One guy runs away. He gets the watch back and he gives the watch back to, you know, shaky hands. And he's just like, you're looking for Kamatage. And then, like, they just start walking. And they go to this door, which he's a little disillusioned because he'd imagine that it was, like, this big temple that everybody goes to. Like, he doesn't think it's going to be, like, this super, like, low-key kind of thing. And he's just like, hey, the guy who's Eddie O'Forge, who I mistakenly thought was Black Panther, and that's the Chadwick guy, which I had to correct because I opened my mouth like an idiot and said the wrong thing. He ends up getting to Kamitage, and he ends up meeting the Elder One, which, because his perceptions are so whack, he assumes it's like the oldest Chinese-looking dude in the place. And there's the Ancient One looking all Tilda Swinton?
Yes, hello? Tilda Swinton.
Thank you. You know, looking all Celtic, looking like out of the last fucking Guardian, like the airbender shit.
She's totally looked like Aang, the last airbender.
All she needed was an arrow on the forehead. Like, that's all she needed.
Seriously. So if anybody's going to remake and try to do a good airbender movie, Tilda Swinton, call her up. I'm okay with it. I will not complain about not using an Asian person. Use Tilda Swinton. I approve of this message.
Well, Cumber Hot McBatcherton is on his way to Nepal. In the sacred library at Kamitage, there's a librarian doing his job, minding his own business, sealing the tomes, making it all nice and safe for, like, knowledge exploration and shit. And in comes the bad guy, who I've seen a million times, whose name I can never remember, but he's got mean face, and that's why he gets cast as the mean guy. And he just shows up with his little henchmen, who I feel bad for this librarian because he was just doing his job. And they tie him up, and then they relieve him, and this is a direct quote from the movie, they relieve him of his head. Like it was a burden to him to have it. We're going to just take it from you. You don't need it anymore. Give it to me. And then off with the head. He goes to the secret, like, forbidden, like, secret tomes, rips out some pages, and he bounces. So there's an issue going on in Kamitage. There's some rogues. There's some people who think certain things need to go down, that now they want to get it down. And the H18, like, no, we can't do that. It's really not as good as you think. I've been around for a long time, I promise. When she finally meets Strange, he is completely, like, logical. Cannot, for the life of him, believe what she is telling him. Because, you know, he is so rooted in logic and practice and all of this. And she then just opens his eye and takes him for a ride. And I'm surprised he didn't piss his pants, because that would have been the kind of, like, experience that I know I would have definitely walked away moist.
Well, that's one of the things that I think that they really did well in this movie, is that they balanced the humor with visual.
Really,
you know, like,
sense.
After he goes through the most trippy thing that I think anybody on the planet could ever experience, you know, especially when you're on a pilgrimage, basically, to try and be healed, okay, to come off of all that stuff, and the first thing he said is, teach me. After being, like, so skeptical and, like, what are you doing with, like, cell regeneration, and that's why you're working here, like, off the books and outside of the FDA and all this kind of stuff. And she's like, no, I just taught him that he could make a spirit do stuff, and that's why he's able to walk. And he's like, spiritualism? Like, blah, 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 blah. And then she's just like, open up your eye, and, like, basically sends him, like, four different dimensions.
I have to give her some serious props, because she got a lot of hate for coming.
She didn't catch a lot. She did a good job. At the same time, I still wish that there had been a little more ethnic diversity in the movie.
Because
there's opportunity for it. Okay, Doctor Strange.
I believe the Ancient One was well written enough.
You know, Strange is an opportunity.
It could have been anyone. Like, they could have put anyone in the role.
Could have.
Because it was.
You already have Benedict Cumberbatch as your lead name. You didn't have to use Tilda Swinton to get more mainstream moviegoers.
I mean, it's not like with Rogue One where, like, the only named guy that I know is Forrest Whitaker. Like, you know.
Right, and Forrest is not a draw for mainstream. You know, so I do think since you already...
He lost weight, though.
He did. But, like, you already have Benedict Cumberbatch, so you already have a name that will draw mainstream, both male and female. So it's okay in these other roles to not necessarily... Hell, Ben Kingsley! I would have taken Ben Kingsley!
Oh no.
Okay? As the Ancient One.
Even though she got a lot of heat for it, and yes, I definitely agree with you about... You
she
know,
did a great job. It was an opportunity that was missed, is how I feel about it.
The movie, when they finally introduced her and her methods for instruction and guidance and wisdom and teaching, really kind of reminded me, and this is really a stretch, so I know someone's going to listen to me say this, like, what the fuck are you talking about, Panda?
Oh, Lord.
Try to hold on, guys. So she kind of reminds me of Mew from the Pokemon movie. Because Mew is, like, the most powerful Pokemon. And here's this cute little pink face mouse who is just kind of like, hey, existence is kind of cool. I'm just going to tinker with this thing because existence is great. Then Mewtwo being like the clone is all, you know, and in this case, that would be like her disciple who, you know, has gone rogue and whatever. Is like, I have seen beyond all this and I want more and blah, blah, blah. And she's just like, no, but it's really not like about that. And life is really about all these other things. And so like, it really gave me this nostalgia for the Pokemon movie. And I'm like, oh my god. Granted, Mew does not, you know, die.
But I will say this, that there is a nice chunk of diversity in the movie, and I don't think that the promotional materials did a good job of covering that because, you know, the main librarian is Wong, who is Asian.
Oh my
you have
god.
Chitwe Elefor, Ejiofor as
Mordo,
yep, which, you know, is a great use, I think, of Chitwell. I mean, like, he did such a fantastic job. And me, being familiar with the comics as well as the animated movies that basically establish the story. Like, if you watch the Doctor Strange animated movie, which is available on iTunes, and I think it's still on Netflix, it's basically this story.
Okay.
That this movie is that story. It's Mordo and Doctor Strange going through his accident and becoming the Sorcerer Supreme. It ends with him becoming the Sorcerer Supreme, and that's the thing that makes Mordo switch. When Mordo learns that he won't be the one to become the Sorcerer Supreme.
Ah, okay.
And that's when he switches and he actually becomes the vehicle to help Dormammu. What?
Like, do you think that got translated or got...
No, I think that it's a different story because you don't want it to just be a straight revenge thing. Because we've already seen that multiple times in the Marvel Universe, right? The, you slighted me, so now I'm the bad guy. In the Iron Man movies, we saw it and we hated it.
Captain America, you knew Bucky killed my parents.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's already been done. So I think, you know, in the pivot that they've done in this movie, versus the animated flick and some of the things that are in the comic book, I do think that, you know, because I read quite a few Doctor Strange books. I didn't collect them all, so I didn't go deep into the Strange universe, but I did always enjoy, because again, I'm a fan of the Tony Stark character, and to me, Doctor Strange is very much like Tony Stark. You know, super cerebral.
Instead of science, it's magic.
Right, and that's the big defining thing, right? You know, Doctor Strange, in his world, where part of the reason why he became so focused on these amazing cases that, you know, had no hope was because his younger sister got sick. And he wasn't able to find anybody that could cure her, and he couldn't do it.
They don't
and
talk so about that at all in the movie.
No. And I don't know that she's actually going to be part of the Strange universe as far as the movies go.
Well, I mean, for this being the origin, like, this would be the place to establish the motive.
But again,
you really didn't need that already because they already gave us him at the beginning.
But again, you know, the Marvel movies have not been strict canon movies. I always come down on the nerd in me wants you to be strict canon. The marketer in me understands why you can't be sometimes, or why it's better to not be in sometimes. And so I think that they did a interesting job in making it a disciple of the Ancient One, that is the person bringing Dormammu in, as opposed to it being just this battle between Mordo and Strange. And it's being driven by Mordo just being jealous that he wasn't chosen as the Sorcerer Supreme. Because that kind of, I think, takes away from the power. Whereas when you have somebody that was a disciple, that is a person that everyone is focused against for the majority of the movie, bringing Dormammu in, it's better and more interesting that way. And then having Mordo start to make his flip after walking away from the Sorcerer's Guild, you know.
Let's talk about that, because we did not talk about it.
Well, we got to do this really quickly, because we're running out of time here.
Right. So the Supreme decides to let Strange study, and very much like a good student, he's pretty quick, like a little too quick.
Cocky.
And very cocky about it. And he hears about relics and how relics choose you and how You know, until then, you have to conjure your own weapon through being pushed into a bad situation with the bad guys coming for the three seals that keep the bad world, dark matter world, from touching our world, happens to gain favor with the Cloak of Levitation.
Yes.
Which I thought was one of the best fucking characters in the whole freaking show, in the whole movie.
Agreed.
Like, you love that cloak. Like, it is... It's just holding on.
Again,
your
they do a really good job with the humor in the movie.
Yeah.
And in the right places, the levity.
Exactly. Everything that was so hard-hitting and fast, like, you got all of that. Because this is also a comic book movie, they also wanted to let you know that while things are dark and hard, all the, like, there's always going to be some sliver of humor. There's always going to be some type of light to draw you back in so that you can prepare for the next onslaught of fast-hitting action.
So anyway, you get further down the road, you fight the bad guys. You end up beating the bad guy.
You find out that the good guy that you were following did some shady stuff for the better, for the common good, because it's not about you. The end.
Like, basically, it's not about you.
It's not about you.
The world's not about you. Learn it. Now I die. Now you save the world. Stop being a little bitch about, you know, not doing harm.
Think about everyone else.
Think about everybody else, because it's not about you.
But you.
And so you learn the lesson, and therefore he's able to get the glow and use the eye.
Like, it's not about you. And, like, right. His eyes just opened up like, oh, my God, it's not about me. And he just got filled with the knowledge.
It's like he was filled with determination. And so he gets the eye, and he's able to basically get the glow and turn back time and force Dormammu basically into a loop where, like, either you just have to kill me for eternity or you're going to have to agree to my terms and leave planet alone and take your people. So they do.
I have that moment from Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise dying all the time. Like, you just have montages of him just dying and coming back like, hey, here to bargain. Here to bargain. Here, I'm totally here to bargain.
And so finally Dormammu, after killing him, like, in the movie they show it like 30 times, so it's probably like 100 or so times where he's like, just let me out.
What do you want?
So
what
he has to take his people, leave the planet alone, never come back, so Dormammu does, and he's able to fix time and things like that. Mordo goes on his happy little way, and the world is somewhat saved.
I can't do this anymore.
But what's so funny, like, the thing for me, and this is like the only moment where I was like, oh, dude, really, that was cheap. The only moment that I had like that in the movie was when all this is done and he's back in the sanctum, the main sanctum in Kamertage, and he's putting the eye back to rest. And Wong, the librarian, is like, yeah, it's really for the best that you do that. Like, his cape even takes itself off him, like, come on, dude, don't be a douche, like, put it back. And Wong is like, yeah, it's best that you do that so that you're not, like, running around the streets or whatever with an infinity stone around your neck.
Oh, yeah, they just drop
Yeah, they just drop that out of no place. And he's like, wait, a what? And he's like, yeah. And then, like, Wong walks out, and he's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
No, Wong's like, God, for as much as you clearly don't know. You need to learn a lot more.
And I'm in my chair in the movie theater like, okay, time out, guys. You can't just drop that Strange has an infinity stone. Like, you can't just do that. And just be like, and spend 13 seconds on it. I had to spend, like a ridiculous...
I thought Wong would be like, look, okay, here's these things called infinity stones. We got six of them, okay?
I mean, and you've got one right now in the eye, and it's really kind of dangerous, so you probably ought to not just be walking around with that, like, all the time. Like, explain it a little bit. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
And don't be like, yeah, you can't go around with an infinity stone. That would be stupid. Oh, wait, you don't want to, you know, for a smart person,
you don't
know shit. And then just walk out of the room. Like, I have questions. Excuse me. So, that's the only time in the entire movie I was like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, time the motherfuck out. Like, that was the moment that I had. Because I'm like, you can't.
Come back here and explain this.
Because I'm like, no.
But what a throwaway line. But one, we do know that this movie, he is returning. We are getting Doctor Strange again.
Strange is going to be in the Thor movie, and there's going to be another Strange movie.
Right, I know. But it's
so there's going to be two. And because he has an Infinity Stone... But because he has an Infinity Stone, that means he's going to be in Infinity Wars.
He's
got to
be a part of that thing with... Right, exactly.
One and two.
That's what I was going to get at. Because we've seen the yellow one.
At this point, I think we've seen all stone... I think the only stone we haven't seen is the red one, right? Because the Tesseract was blue.
Right.
The stone that's in Guardians was purple. You have Vision, which is yellow. And now you have the eye in Strange, which is green. So the only stone that we haven't seen...
Wait, there are six stones, not five.
But we haven't seen the red stone. No, because it's all five fingers. And then
I thought
and then there's a stone that's on the back of his hand.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's an individual stone or not, or if that's just a
focusing element. Oh, but they all come together, they fuse
individually. Right.
Okay.
So I don't know. I think it's that. I don't think that there are two other stones. Right. I think there's just the red stone, that we haven't seen.
Because
the stone that's on the back of his hand is yellow.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
Visually, I thought this was very stunning. The pacing, I thought, was really well directed as well.
Yeah, it ran the right length.
That you weren't engaged at all. There were no lulls, really, in any of the dialogue and or the pacing, which is also really pretty amazing, considering. They established a lot of his origin without it being, you know, too heavy or too much too quickly. I think they definitely established the lines of, you know, relationships also fairly well, so that if we see this play out in other things, we'll be able to instantly pull it back into our memories. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I've heard both sides of, you know, the movie verse screaming its praises or flipping at the bird. I mean, it's really pick your own here, but I liked it and I want to see more of the Cloak of Levitation.
So I
back
think
people's heads in like a doggy.
So I think like there are 6 infinity gems and I don't know exactly how the movies are pairing these up because I think that they've swapped some of the colors because like the green one was supposed to be the soul gem, which allows people to steal and control and manipulate other living souls, not time, which the green gem in this movie controls time. There is a time gem, but the time gem is supposed to be orange. Then there's the space gem, which is purple, which allows whoever's wielding it to be in any location or move any object anywhere and rearrange space. Then there's the blue gem, which was the mind gem, which allows the user to enhance their mental or psionic powers. So I think that one is the yellow gem. I think that's vision.
That's vision.
I don't think that we've seen an orange gem yet. And so now I don't know what it's going to be because the orange gem should be time, but time is green. And the soul gem, I don't know that we've seen. Would that be the Tesseract? That'd probably be the Tesseract because that can control people.
Yes.
Because they made that blue. So like all the colors are all over the place. You've got the yellow gem, which is the reality gem, which lets the user fulfill the wishes, even if the wishes contradict basically the laws of science and like known
natural law.
Right. And then you have the red gem, which I think this is the color gem we haven't seen yet, but the red gem allows the wielder to have all power and energy that has or will ever exist in the world, and it boosts the other gems. So, like, I think that's the gem that's on the back of the palm, because it basically boosts all the gems that are in the fingers of the gauntlet.
But any...
Yeah, so much nerdery.
There's so much going on, and we're going to have so many people analyzing it, but, I mean, entertainment value was through the roof. I did thoroughly enjoy this. And they only had to use 5 songs in the entire movie. And one of them was Single Ladies by Beyonce.
It
so
was.
I'm happy.
It's just like... It had Beyonce in it, so I'm good.
So I'm good.
But no, I think they did a really good job with it, and I'm glad, because I was really worried, because Strange could go really wrong, especially because it's an acquired taste, like, not a lot of people read the books, or are aware of the character, but I think Benedict did a great job, like, he is the perfect Doctor Strange. I can't wait to see what he does in the Thor movie. I can't wait to see what the next Doctor Strange movie looks like, because obviously, from the after credit stuff, Mordo's going to be a big part of it, and you know, with
Mordo's gotten really emo,
and with Dormammu not being involved, I'm very interested in seeing what they'll elevate and bring to the forefront outside of just Mordo to be his foil. So I'm looking forward to that, and obviously because of all of these things, I'm even more pumped about Infinity Wars. So I was very happy with it, and I think that it was a really good execution, and I will definitely be purchasing it when it comes out on digital.
Well then.
All right, so that's it, guys. That's all we got for this week. Make sure that you check out all of our news and reviews on our website, electricsisterhood.com. You can also check them out in Apple News if you have an iOS device by simply looking for Electric Sisterhood and adding us to your favorites, and that way all of our news articles, as soon as we put them up on the platform, will show up in your For You section. So definitely definitely check them out. Easy to share. Like I said, hit up our website. You can also subscribe to our RSS feed through our website. The links are on the homepage. You can't miss them. You can also check out our podcast. If you like what we've been talking about on this episode, then make sure that you subscribe to our podcast so you can check out all of our episodes, the previous 500 or so that came before this one, as well as all the new stuff that we put out every week as soon as it's brand new just for you. And you can get it on our website. You can get it through iTunes on the desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device by looking for the Eshcast and subscribing. You can also get our podcast on Stitcher Radio, through Google Play, pretty much any place that podcasts are aggregated, you will be able to find our show. So make sure that you hit the subscribe button and get our brand new episodes when we put them out on the web. If you enjoy what we do and the stuff that we talk about, then definitely make sure that you check out all the sites and podcasts that are created by our entire family. Our team is absolutely amazing, and they're some of the nerdiest and most creative people that I've ever had the pleasure of working with. So make sure that you check out b3crew.com and the No Borders, No Race podcast, hosted by our homeboy KBD. Loves all things indie, music, manga, anime, TV, theater, you name it, he loves it. Definitely check out the No Borders, No Race podcast. And learn a little Japanese every time you listen. And if you like streaming, well, we got streamers too. Every Wednesday night, our homie Hamsterman2049 hooks it up on Twitch, on his Twitch, with live streams of games that he's playing, both new and old, starting at 9 Eastern. So, and that's PM, not AM. But definitely make sure that you check out Hamsterman on the feeds, playing all kinds of stuff. I absolutely thoroughly enjoyed watching him play Layers of Fear, because I can't play that game. It is hysterical. And make sure that you check it out, because it is amazing to watch somebody's reactions to scary games. You can also check out our homeboy, Phil the Issues Guy, at theissuesprogram.com. He does recaps, Phil's Recap and Review, a great show that you should check out on YouTube. So go and search him out, subscribe. You can call in live and be part of the shows, be part of chat, like all kinds of stuff going on at Phil's Recap and Review on YouTube and on the website. Be part of that. And last but certainly not least, our homeboys over at nerdcrave.com, talking about serving up and featuring the stuff that nerds crave. From anime to comics to video games and more. If it's nerdy and you want to know about it, the dudes over at Nerd Crave are probably talking about it. So definitely make sure that you check it out, that you subscribe to all of us, you find us on social. Our core will always be the Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh. And we are on Twitter and on Instagram at ESH News. The entire team is on social as well, so make sure that you hit up all of our websites, get our individual handles, follow us, engage with us, let us know if there's something you want us to check out, review, or just share our thoughts on, or whatever. And on social, or email us, any way you want to get in touch with us, just do it. You can use a form on our website, a contact us page, be like, hey, you guys should check out so-and-so. I would love it if you did a show on so-and-so. And you know what? We probably will. And if we do, we'll give you a shout out so you can get your 5 seconds of fame on the internet, because it's no longer 15 seconds. That shit's been cut down to 5 seconds. So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, guys.
Bye, everybody.